Thank you. And I'll let you know right now, and I'll let everybody know a little bit later. Margo and I are going to be out of town next week, so there'll not be class next Tuesday. Okay. I don't know what the I could say yes, we'll probably meet, but I don't know what the Wi-Fi setup is going to be where we are, and I'd rather not set it up to fail. So it's best that we just sort of take a rest, and we'll tune in again next week or the week after.
We're not
So,
meeting on Sunday either.
no, yeah, Sunday too, especially on
Okay.
Sunday because, well, there's more people involved on Sunday. I think I let people know on Sunday, but I'll let you know again. So Sunday and Tuesday, if you happen to be both, we are on sabbatical for next week.
We
Okay.
will try our
Okay.
best to pull through.
Yes.
Somehow or another, you're gonna make it. Okay.
We will do our very best to be remain stable.
Intact.
Thank Let's see. I think we're about. Yeah, I think we're okay to start. So, as we do each week, get a sense of our connection with one another. Get a sense of your openness. Letting go of questions or rigid desires to figure something out. Another way of doing that is consciously opening our hearts to gratitude for having this time together. And opening our hearts in surrender. Especially since we know that we are exploring what we might call unknown territory, the undiscovered country. And as we begin this evening, as I was reviewing some of last week's material and just sort of getting a little bit grounded in where we're going, I was struck with the beauty of this teaching. It's very, very simple in some ways. And yet very profound in some ways as well. And there's a, for me, that was the best word, best description I could come up with. There's a beauty in that, that there's part of me, part of you, and part of me that already knows this, that's already connected to this as being the deepest truth. And yet at the same time, I am always looking forward to settling into that truth on a deeper level. And so I appreciate being able to do this with you, for sure. I'm going to begin on page 86. And there was one place that I wanted to, oh yeah, here it is. Just to overlap just a little bit. Second full paragraph on page 86. 86. where the guides say, your recognition of the inherent divine is a recognition of what is only true and always true. And the mask the other wears cannot stand in the face of truth, because the mask he or she has taken is a lie. The personality structure, while valid in its ambition, has never been the true self. And when the true self is unmasked, when it is seen by the one who knows who she is, the divine in the one you see becomes the action of the reclamation in the other. The divine is the reclaimer. All you are doing is knowing the truth, and the reclamation happens. So you don't create the connection. Connection's already there. The awareness is already there. And we, in our own way of doing this, decide whether we're going to surrender ourselves to that or not. And there was one other quote I wanted to get to. If I can find it here. Down at the bottom of page 86. Now the choice is theirs at the level of personality, but you can claim the divine in an individual or in all those readings residing upon this globe. The effect is the same. You are claiming what is always true. And in this claim, you lift those you know that are claiming that you are realizing in the upper room by the nature of being. By the nature of being, it just is. The way Jesus put it very simply was, which really got the Pharisees really ticked off, was he said, before Abraham came to be, I am. Before Abraham came to be, I am. So we're going to begin, unless you got any leftover stuff, on page 87, day 10. And as we begin that piece, this new section, imagine what it would be like to know yourself in higher consciousness. That you have a body sitting in the chair, but that's not who you are. You have thoughts running through your mind. What about this? What about that? That's not who you are either. You have emotions and feelings, which is somewhat reminiscent of some of your insights with this work. When you said, aha, I got it. And that's not who you are either. You are not becoming a divine consciousness, you already are. But as a divine consciousness, you are also stretching and growing. So it's almost like you got to be able to live in that paradoxical place that I already am divine consciousness, but I'm also stretching and growing at the same time. Each of you decides your idea of who and what you are, commensurate with your understanding and the values instilled in you by the world you express through. Each of you decides what it means to be a man, what it means to be a woman, what it means to be loved and to love. And each one of you comprehends in accordance with the systems that you have been regulated by, And by this, we mean you understand yourself with a barometer that you have been given for understanding. We're breaking out of that mold, but that's still part of it. Each of you says yes to the scales that you express through. Each of you says yes to the comparisons you make, one against the other, this against that. Each of you decides to know yourself with the mirror that has been handed to you to know yourself through. And the mirror has been handed to us from generation upon generation of people that have come before us. All of those people who are telling us who we are. And we're at the point right now where we are willing to question that. Willing and being open to look at ourselves differently from the way we have been taught or proclaimed to look at ourselves. Looking at ourselves through the eyes of dualism, either this or that, good or bad, this. And that's usually how we've all fallen into, including myself certainly, fallen into the comparison trip of being better than or worse than or not enough as, whatever might happen to be. It takes all sorts of different forms. But they go on to say, now, as the divine self, there is no mirror. There's nothing to look at to compare to something else. As the divine self, there is no mirror. There is expression, perception, what you see, and the knowing that you instill in what you see, because the one who knows has the awareness of the claim, I am free. I am not in duality. That's another way of saying I am free. I am in oneness. And again, that's not something we grab a hold of and say, I am in oneness. Something I realize kind of with an open hand and knowing that my sense of oneness, my sense of connectedness with you is constantly evolving. So for me sitting here in my chair, part of me still sees you as a picture on a screen or a name on the screen. Even though I know that's not who you are, that still turns out to be, how shall I put it? Still turns out to me to be somewhat, some part of my identification of who you are. And of course, I have to flip that around and say, well, if that's how I'm seeing you, then that's also how I'm seeing myself. And again, I'm not making a judgment about that. I'm just saying, boy, it's really interesting sometimes to realize how burdened I am with limitation. Not somebody else's fault, my stuff.
Mm. Jerry?
Yeah.
Can I share something real quick?
Sure.
It's about this reclamation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just been happening to me. And I just wanted to share it with you. I think last week I asked you, was it hard for you to make the decision to leave the brotherhood? And because I see myself in a worldly view through that mirror in the world, I saw myself as a housewife. And I didn't want to be a housewife anymore. I didn't want to dust. I want to be free.
Okay.
I want to be able to go where I want to go and live my life and do what I want to do. And I was looking to be free, to change my role, just like you said, it came to you. And then it dawned on me that through the divine self, I am free. And I'm not a housewife. That's in the body. Through the eyes of God, I'm a child of God, and I'm a child of love, and I'm free. I didn't have a situation, Jerry. Thought it was the most traumatic. I created the worst situation you'll ever want to go through, but it wasn't even there. It was an illusion.
That's perfect.
Because God said
you stayed with it until the insight happened. Okay, you didn't say, "Well, I'm going to burn my house down. I'm going to quit this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that." You stayed with it, as difficult as that might be, for the reclamation, all right, for the redefining or the undefining of who you are to come through. That's marvelous. Now, for some of us, it might mean that we do need to change our external circumstances. That's not necessarily, but that's not a necessity for coming to the awareness you're talking about. And in fact, the guides talk about that in one of the earlier books, and they say something like that in effect is, you know, you think because you've made this aware, you've had this awareness that you have to throw everything out, throw the baby out with the bathwater. Right? Yeah. I'm saying you can keep the baby and the bathwater if you want to.
If you want to.
You just don't have to define yourself in those terms. Makes a huge difference.
Hey, Jerry?
Yeah.
One interesting thing I heard is when you pray, duality, non-duality.
Wow. I like that. Duality, non-duality.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite things that happened when Margot and I were visiting Thailand is people were doing this all the time. They were literally bowing to one another. Duality, non-duality.
Right? Bringing our things together.
It felt like such a blessing. And it was. I love that. Thank you. Thank you, Rob.
Duality. That's beautiful.
Non-duality. Or you could say duality, non-duality. The awareness of the claim, I am free. Because she knows she is free. She's not seeking to label, to emblemize, to create a dictate or a mandate of what a thing should be called, including herself. She allows what she sees to be revealed to her. And what is revealed in the upper room will always be known in truth. You could have wrote that, Diane.
It's hitting me right there in the heart.
Perfect. What this means is you are no longer deceived by the veils of illusion that would seek to tell you what is meritful and what is not, what is a good thing or bad, what is a pleasant thing or unpleasant thing, because those things are known as values that you have abided by. The thing is simply known and received, and consciousness you hold at this level of vibration and attunement receives the information in truth, and consequently the thing is seen, in fact, realized or known in a higher comprehension. As simple as that's, I'm perceiving that thing, that material object over there, I'm perceiving that as a chair. I'm not putting a label on it, I'm perceiving that as a chair. You know, there might, a week from now, I might perceive it as a bed or a place to sleep on. So I'm claiming my perception not as being the truth, but where I'm at this particular moment. And letting that be. What is revealed in the upper room will always be known in truth. So much of what you decide is based on the ideas of what should be, how things should be. This is more valuable than that. This is a higher claim than that. And those comparisons work as a grid or a measuring system that you are then bound by. If everything exists within the grid, How can it be known anew? That's what Jesus had such a problem with. Well, I wouldn't say he had a problem, but what rubbed him the wrong way so often with the scribes and the Pharisees, who had a very explicit set of commandments and set of rules on actions and behaviors and how you relate to the outside world and how you relate to everybody else. Not only was he, I dare say he was probably annoyed, but the biggest thing that created, I think, the friction was that they attempted to put all of those rules on everybody else. And the people who were the poor people who were the serfs, or the ones who were kind of scraping out a living, looked at these leaders, these spiritual religious leaders of their clan, of their faith, right? Looked at them as having the truth. They have the truth and I don't. And so their philosophy was, we will tell you what is true. Of course, Christianity went through the same thing for years, centuries, actually. I will show you the truth. And if you don't believe it, guess what? We're going to burn you at the stake. We're going to fry you like a weenie. Because if you don't believe the way I tell you to, then it's going to scare me and make me feel terribly insecure, and don't do that. So if you make me insecure, what that's going to be shown is anger and violence and retribution. And there it is. You are no longer deceived by the veils of illusion. We were talking about that just a little bit before class. That when you hear the word illusion, it doesn't mean that it's not real. What illusion means is that something is not permanent. It's not lasting. Here I am, wasn't I? Right. So when I grab a hold of this thing and say, well, now I've got it. Now I've got the truth by the nuts here. I got it trapped in my hand. I know what it is. Well, as soon as I do that, it's not there anymore. It's like I'm attached to my new car. Well, that's fine, but after a couple of days, it's not a new car anymore. But I'm still attached to it. Nothing can be comprehended until it is first seen or known in a high way. Through the lens, through the glasses, through the upper room, through the higher self. There is no exception here. And we tell you why we say this. Immediately you wish to know how an atrocity can be known in a high way. How something you would call evil can be known in a high way. But we would have to reprimand you by saying you are looking at the thing within that scale of good and evil, light and dark, perhaps high and low, although the high and low, as we teach it, is simply a descriptor of resonance. So you're looking at something through your lower consciousness and trying to define it through your higher consciousness. It doesn't work. Mm-hmm. I might have sent this to you. Let me just check with you because it reminds me of something that I might need to send again. That there was a whole discussion. I had a whole thing written up about good and evil, right, wrong. I guess sort of that's sort of the deepest or one of the deepest dualities that we come across. Did I send you some stuff on that? Might have been one of my If it wasn't in one of the class reflections, I'll send it again. Because to me, it's extremely pertinent, right? It's like looking at, imagining that, not even the universe, but imagining that creation is like this huge, almost undefinable tapestry. And we're focused in with this little magnifying glass. We're focused in on this one little section of the tapestry, thinking that it's the whole thing. Or even more so than that, we flip the tapestry over and there's all sorts of knots and threads and stuff going in all sorts of different directions. It looks like chaos. And we're looking at this one little bit of chaos and thinking somehow or another it's the whole picture. But see, the difficulty is, all right, is the only way I find out I have blinders on is by taking them off. You get sort of the cosmic joke about that one, all right? The only way I know I have blinders on is if something or someone comes along and takes them off. So when Paul was riding his horse on the road to Damascus, and he was thrown off the horse and he was struck blind, and the voice from heaven said, "Saul, Saul, why dost thou persecute me?" And he said, when have I ever persecuted the Lord? And the voice said, "As long as you do it to one of these, the least of my brethren, you've done it to me." But Paul was on a trip to persecute some more Christians. So he finally got to the place, he finally got to Damascus where he was, and somebody took him in. I can't remember the guy's name right now. Took him in and helped him because he was still blind. He washed his face, he prayed about it, he opened himself up in surrender. And what it said was, the scales fell from his eyes. "Lord, that I may see." The scales fell from his eyes. "We would have to reprimand you by saying, you see, looking at the thing within that scale of good and evil, light and dark, perhaps even high and low, when you clarify your meaning of good and evil, what you will understand is that what is good has been spoken as good, has been decided as good in comparison to something else. She did well in school, she got a B minus. He did poorly in school, he got a D. She's an excellent student, look at that A. Within that scale, there is a codification of learning. And what has been learned has been graded in a scale in comparison to others. If the scale does not exist and the grades are not present, how would you comprehend the learning of one student would not be in comparison to others, but in the alignment of that of what that student holds? Wouldn't it be wonderful if our education system was like that? That everybody's an expert in something. But you don't blame the fish because it can't climb a tree. But you don't measure its ability because, well, it flunked that course, can't climb a tree. The Latin word for education is educare. And what it freely translated as is to lead out of. Actually, Socrates talked about that too. He said, everybody really knows everything. They just don't know that they know everything. Can you live in the knowing? As a school teacher, when I learned about drawing forth what's already there. One of our granddaughters is a special ed school teacher, okay? And we knew this about her already, but she's very much involved in that process of drawing out what is already there. "I see you. I know who you are. And by my loving you, by my openness to you, I will let you begin to see that yourself, if you choose to." It might take 30 or 40 years for you to remember that. I can still remember some of my high school teachers and some of the things they taught me. But it wasn't what they taught me so much, it was their presence with me. Their ability to let me know on some level of their being beyond words that you are important to me. And because you are important to me, you are important. And don't let anybody tell you different. We're all students. Everybody you meet is a student and a teacher. Everybody you meet. The one who knows the truth of something has claimed the truth and has inherited the wisdom of the truth as part of her experience. The one who learns information that he or she may parrot may have learned recitation and nothing more. Experience, finally, is what we teach you. And your experience as the divine liberates you beyond the known, beyond the frames of reference that you have used to decide what is meaningful, what is good or evil, high or low. Let me say that again. That's one of those sentences that sums everything up. Experience, finally, is what we teach you. And your experience as the divine self liberates you beyond the known, beyond the frames of reference that you have used to decide what is meaningful, what is good or evil, high or low. Each of you decides in your own way that the divine as you is the true meaning of being. The divine as you is the true meaning of being. The idea that what you are is a bunch of cells holding together in skin for the purpose of dying one day will be what claims you in limited experience. How did Stephen King define human beings as being a bag of bones? In fact, what you are is the manifestation of the divine in form, who has come for the reason we teach you. Your knowing of who and what you are claims you in accord with the level of agreement where the manifest world can be renown. I will see myself as the truth of who I am. And because I begin to see myself as the truth of who I am, I see the world as a reflection of that truth. Now, when we see atrocity, we see violence, when we see murder, mayhem, chaos, we're not being asked to see the good in that. My prayer often is, I know there is good in this wider picture. I'm fixating on this smaller piece of the picture. And my small self wants to demand, where's the good in that? My higher consciousness says, boy, I certainly wish that weren't going on here on planet Earth. It's quite disturbing. But how can I open myself up to the truth of what this really means? You asked a great question last Sunday, Diane. You said, you know, if Jesus were here right now, or even when he was in physical form, and he wouldn't see war, what would he be seeing? And I really had to sit with that one. What would he be seeing? He wouldn't say, oh, that's nothing. I think he would see the hurt. I think he would see the pain. I think he would see the anger and the fear. Not that he was reinforcing that at all, but he would see that. I think in my higher consciousness, I might be heretical about this, but I'll say it out loud anyway. In my higher consciousness, I can still see you as a person in pain, maybe trapped in lower consciousness. I'm not judging you. It's a real fine edge here. I'm probably stomping all over it too, right? But the best I can do with this is when I am in higher consciousness, I have compassion for your struggle, for your pain, for your inability or my perception, maybe that might be a better way of putting it, my perception of your inability to see yourself as you truly are.
That's what I would think, because I would think that he would look out and feel the pain of man's inability to see what they're doing to themselves and hold compassion in his heart for that level of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And of the mentality of greed and want and power. Because Jesus, I know in his spiritual highness, was also in a political realm. He cared about it because he cared about what happened to society,
mm-hmm.
his society.
He didn't ignore that, right.
And he saw man as, you know, greed and wanting and any walk all over whatever. So I feel his heart mm-hmm. would at some point, but also with wisdom, know that we are creating it and mm-hmm. we have to come to terms with it and change it.
Yes.
Within ourselves, like you always say, you know, within us.
One of the most heartrending passages, for me anyway, in New Testament mm-hmm. scripture is when Jesus is standing up on a hillside looking down at the city of Jerusalem. And he said, "Jerusalem, Jerusalem, would that I could gather you under my wings as a hen gathers her chicks, but you would not let me." Would that I could gather you under my wings as a hen gathers his chicks, but you would not let me.
Mm-hmm.
I find that just heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm. Is it because this is the dream we chose to dream?
Yeah. And you eventually you'll wake up, okay?
Yeah. And the compassion, I believe, Jesus sees in us is people wake up. This is the dream that you dream. This is not my dream. This is not the dream I dream for my people. This is your dream.
I've never heard him say it out loud, but my sense is, and this might just be from my own limited understanding, is don't you get it? I mean, essentially, he said that to his apostles quite often. Don't you get it? I mean, one time when he said, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees. In other words, be aware of their manipulative energy that makes you want to feel guilty or ashamed or whatever. And the disciples start talking with one another. One of them says, he's mad at us because we don't have any bread. And I can just see him going, what the fuck, man, you know?
That's exactly what he said. Exactly.
An exact quote.
Quote.
You know, Jerry, when you always talk about Jesus, when he'd come down from the mountains and the disciples were asleep and he'd get really like, can't you even stay awake? Well, that reminds me of how angry Jesus gets that everyone's asleep.
Yeah.
Can't you awaken?
That's the whole thing about the good news. When John the Baptist came out of the desert, he said, repent, which doesn't mean you're bad or something's wrong with you. It means wake up.
See, Rob, Gertchiff, asleep. We are asleep at the wheel.
That's right. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Man, I thought
I'd put that quote in there too from Luke, because when Jesus sees violence, I do think he has that. Y'all were talking about that earlier, that compassion, even when violence is being done to him.
Mm-hmm.
he's saying forgive them. So it's got to be the same attitude he would have when he sees war going on. Yeah. They don't know what they're doing. They have no idea.
They're asleep, as we say. They don't know what they're doing. And so
the repercussions, if you believe in reincarnation, truly what you are doing to yourself.
Mm-hmm. Eventually, we're all going to get it.
Eventually, we will. Maybe that's where his compassion comes in at. He knows that eventually we'll wake up.
That it's a dream.
Marion Williamson put it, I know Margot doesn't like this one, but it strikes me as funny sometimes, is God will eventually outsmart your self-hatred. Mm-hmm. In other words, it's going to happen that you wake up. You're going to wake, we're kind of pushing the envelope here of saying, you know, I'd rather wake up sooner rather than later, okay?
Oftentimes it's not the act of waking up. We get our glimpses, but it's the challenge of remaining awake.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely, right.
True.
Definitely.
True.
Definitely. I mean, we've all had those moments of enlightenment, awareness, compassion, whatever way you want to describe that. And then 2 or 3 minutes later, it's what's for lunch?
Yeah.
Okay.
It takes discipline and strength to remain awake.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard it said that everyone's a sage when they're at a funeral.
Yeah.
Yes.
I always like to remember, Jerry, that this is a dream and we are already one with God. It's already happened. It's already done. We are one with God. This is just a dream.
But the truth makes little difference if I'm still in unawareness.
Okay.
How do you know you're awake?
Rob?
I was going to rely on the, I forget which justice said this, but it's kind of like pornography. You know it when you see it.
Yeah.
I think truly being awake is something you can't, the mind is, you know, you're talking earlier about reflection. You need a subject object.
Mm-hmm.
Become awake. I think some of that subject object goes away and you just are.
Right. There's no duality. Can I?
There's no duality. And so you're asking a dualistic question. And you want to answer that is non-dual.
And so
it's kind of tricky that way. You're kind of tricky, Jerry.
Perfect. Thank you for reminding me of that. Yeah. So often, and this is what Paul does so often in these books. And that's a great way to describe it, Rob, is he is asking a dualistic question, looking for a non-dualistic answer. Right? And you'll notice how adroitly the guide sort of bypass his questions, okay? And not answer the question directly, but give a directive that allows us to be free of the dualistic nature of the question that he's asking to begin with. And they don't get out, and don't, because essentially it probably boils down to the same question. You know, what am I doing here? Or what about this or what about that? And they adroitly kind of bypass that to teach or open us into a deeper sense of truth. And to recognize that, you know, there is no definitive answer to most of these questions here, because again, it's a dualistic answer, or looking for a dualistic answer, which is here, right? But not here.
Mm-hmm. And I love the word guide, because that suggests, here, come see for yourself. I can't do it for you, but I can take you there.
Mm-hmm.
And Jerry,
yeah,
that brings also to, as Rob was saying, how difficult, you know, that answer, type of answer can be because of the duality of it. And also, we can't all grasp it because of the different levels of consciousness. We're mm-hmm. back to consciousness. You can't grasp something that is not in the realm of your conscious state of being.
And grasping does not exist in higher consciousness.
Yeah. Yes. Bad word. Grasping.
No, but I understand what you're getting at.
Yeah.
So let's just take a look at the last, 45 minutes or so that we've been together. So much of this time, as I reflect upon it, not in a judgmental way, but in more of in an observational kind of way, not good, bad, or indifferent. But for me, it's been an experience about being open to spirit, not having an agenda. It wasn't about being right or getting to the next page or doing whatever might happen to be. And I'm presuming that a lot of us, if we were to look back on that, might have found ourselves in the same place. So when Buddha, one of the reasons why Buddha is so important is because he learned how to stay there.
Mm-hmm.
So when he was under the Bo tree and he said, I'm not moving until I become enlightened. First of all, he had to be in such a rarefied spiritual atmosphere to be able to even be aware of that one, to be open to the possibility. But once that shift in consciousness took place, it is said that he had sort of an aura, a halo around him. And he was approached by people who said, what are you? Are you a god? Are you a saint? He said, no. He said, I'm awake. I'm awake. Jesus could have said the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
What are you? I am the way, the truth, and the life.
The light.
That's the way. But it is only those who have eyes. Those who have eyes, let them see. Those who have ears, let them hear. It's only those who are living out of a higher state of consciousness that are going to be able to realize that. Because they're not realizing it just about me. The only way I can see somebody as being the light of the world is if I see myself as being the light of the world first. If I don't, then I'm going to turn you into an object that I'm going to worship, that I'm going to essentially give my power away to. The way Merton put it, you know, after his wonderful experience on 4th and Walnut, seeing everybody as beings of light, and coming to the conclusion also that I love all these people. He said very simply, I think it was in his book, Conjectures of a Guilty Bystander. He said, I wonder what it would be like if we were to see one another like that all the time, in that awakened state. He said, the only problem would be that we'd be falling down worshiping one another. Nobody would do the dishes, okay? We'd be falling down. Of course, the dishes wouldn't matter then.
I don't.
we would be falling down worshiping one another.
This, Jerry, the question about dualism, it reminds me of, I saw myself as a housewife, so I had two roles, you know, myself in the world and myself as a spiritual person, and I created that dualism, but God is always, he doesn't have dualism, he is one, always, I like that, we create that dualism, I created mine. And it wasn't true.
I agree. Let me just do one more paragraph before we close tonight. I'll try not to get too involved. Now, each of you decides what the will means through your choice to claim the self in any intention. I will pick the apple from the tree is a choice you make. I will eat the apple is a choice you make. I will throw away the core is a choice you make. I will marry that man or that woman, conceive a child, grow old. These are all choices that you make. And the will that informs them is an agreement only to the choices that the small self can comprehend. The will itself, when moved into union with true divinity, expresses beyond a scale, beyond something that can be measured. And what can be claimed or known or decided need not be conferred by prior history, but what is possible in the upper room. And in the upper room, everything is possible. In the upper room, you are open to infinite possibilities. That's one of the ways I realized that I am in higher consciousness. I am open to infinite possibilities. And this moment holds infinite possibilities for me, as well as you. And I say that out loud. I'm listening to myself say that. And I say, how often are you really in that state of mind that this next moment offers me infinite possibilities? Oops. Again, not as a judgment so much, but as a realization of, wow, what would it be like to live in that state of mind? I am open to the infinite possibilities that this moment brings me. So I'm going to ask you to put your stuff down. And close your eyes if you like, take a couple of breaths. The rhythm of your heart, the rhythm of your breathing. This open sense of gratitude for being. Our being has been expressed in many, many different ways in the last 45 minutes. And yet none of those ways have conflicted with one another. None of those ways have been better than anyone else. We haven't reached beyond the known, but we have allowed ourselves to go beyond the known. I know who I am, and I am free. I know who I am, and I am free. And as I put on my earthly mind again, it does not have to interfere with my divine consciousness. I can cook dinner and still be in the presence of God. Mm-hmm. So you can come back to your awareness of the rhythm of your breathing. And stretch a bit. Open your eyes when you're ready. To remind you, we will not be here next week. Margo and I are going to be on a short trip down to Florida, and I'm not sure what the Wi-Fi connections are going to be like. So rather than make it confusing, we're going to be on sabbatical next week. So, but you will be with me, and we will be with one another as well. Jewel. Non-dual. Have a wonderful couple of weeks. And
you too, Jerry.
Thanks, guys.
And everyone. Yes.
Have fun, Jerry.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye. Bye.
Yeah, everybody. Thanks.
Behave yourself.
Hi, Betsy. You're going to miss us. You're going to miss us, Jerry.
I will.
You will.